Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the World's Greatest Podcast. It is, of course, That's the Way the Cookie Crumbles. We are back as a threesome. We've got a treat for you this week. It is me, Stan, and Jim. Jim is back from the Middle East, allegedly putting out fires for a said club that play in Sky Blue that isn't Coventry City. So, Stan, we're going to start at the Emirates. Arsenal versus Aston Villa. One of the shock results of the weekend. Everybody knew that Aston Villa weren't going to roll over for Arsenal, especially Unai Emery. Being an ex-Arsenal boss, they went there, they won 0-2. So Leon Bailey scored, followed by Ollie Watkins. And like I said, Arsenal getting beat 2-0 at home to Aston Villa. And Stan, we'll talk about Villa in a minute, but we'll start first and foremost with Arsenal, with the question that seems to be floated around social media all day is, are Arsenal out of the title race?
Well, to answer that, I'd say no. Because there's only, what, 2 or 3 points in it still. And I mean, a fortnight ago, the Opta computers were saying Liverpool had 50% chance and now the third. So in another fortnight, who knows? I think what it is, though, I think it's a huge blow mentally as well. I think they're stuttering at the same point pretty much the 32nd game week as they did last season. Okay, they haven't been top four however long they were last season. I think when the 8 points clear after 29, 30 games played. So they've not had that, but I just think with City quietly putting wins together, they've also not had the huge, you know, stretch of wins that we normally see them have. Although that might happen now, in which case, if they win the next 6 games, it doesn't matter what Arsenal and Liverpool do, because City will win the title. But I think it was a huge blow mentally. I think with Liverpool also dropping points, which we'll come on to, I think with it being this period in the season and with it being Aston Villa, obviously a tough test at home, I think if Arsenal came through this with a win and pushed it maybe into a two-horse race, you could argue then, obviously with Arsenal going back top, although with the hardest run out the three, I think it would have been a massive moment for them to go top there, a massive signal of intent and a message to City that it's not going to be like it was last season. But instead, you know, they end up losing 2-0 in a pretty turgid performance from Arsenal with not a lot happening, and Villa probably the deserved winners by the end of the game. So, yeah, I think it's more mentally. I don't think they're out the title race in terms of points. I mean, obviously, they're not. It's still really tight. They've got the better goal difference too. But I think mentally it's going to be huge for them, you know, to see what happens in the next game. I think if they don't win the next game and City do, then you are looking at City just probably running away with it there, especially with Liverpool's performances of late and results. So, yeah, Arsenal need to turn it around quickly. I think they play 3 of the big 6 in the last 6 league games. So, big test there for them. I think they've got Chelsea, Spurs and United, but they've also got Wolves, Bournemouth and Everton too, and none of them are going to be easy games. 3 home, 3 away. So I guess we'll see what Arsenal are made of and if they've learned from the lessons from last season and got a bit of a thicker skin.
Definitely. And Jim, Aston Villa prior to this, they'd only won 1 in the last 4 league games, and usually they have a torrid record having played in Europe midweek and then coming playing Thursday, Sunday, and obviously they've got a massive result on the road, and it's incredible for Emery, and we will talk about Arsenal a little bit more in a little bit, but it's just massive for Aston Villa this, Jim, in terms of it looks like now they do have 1 foot in the Champions League, especially if we can get that 5th place, but at the minute that's not even looking likely, but it's even looking likely that they might finish 4th there.
Yeah, I think they've gone 3 points ahead of Tottenham, and Tottenham have got a game in hand, but In the running, Tottenham have got so many hard games. They play the top three, don't they? They play Liverpool, Arsenal and City, so they're probably not likely to get 9 points out of that one. And Aston Villa have gone to Arsenal. Probably their hardest game left on the fixture list. A game where you're looking at the running and expecting 0 points, and they've come away with 3. So yeah, brilliant from them, and the performance is brilliant as well, because first half, first 20 minutes especially, I thought Arsenal were all over him. It seemed like it was only going to go one way. Emi Martinez made a fantastic save, and he was kind of digging deep. Diego Carlos was brilliant. The old defence was pretty good, Ezri Konsa as well. And especially after shipping 3 to Brentford the week before, you kind of expected this to be only a home win, but they dug in there, and then second half, they came out as a completely new team. Aston Villa were dominating. They were the one on the front foot, and they took their chances that Arsenal didn't. So yeah, a great win. I mean, they've had two, haven't they, this season. They beat us and they beat Arsenal, and in both games it was worthy of the 3 points. So that's kind of what Emery's done to them this season. Probably a man, I know we're going to probably get onto this in a future podcast, but yeah, manager of the year contender for sure. Maybe the number one guy, to be fair.
Yeah, and you spoke about manager of the year there, Jim. You actually put something in the group chat there talking about the player of the year, and Ollie Watkins actually moves nicely over to him there. 29 goal involvements in the Premier League for Aston Villa this season. And obviously, like we said, it looks like they've got 1 foot in the Champions League, and Emery's took him to the promised land. But Ollie Watkins, Troy Deeney, Jim, called him a winger pretending to be a striker. And what a strange comment from a very strange bloke.
Very insecure bloke, old Troy, innit? Yeah, Ollie, I mean, Emi Martinez said it in the post-match interview on Sky, saying that, listen, not many players out of the Big Six get the recognition they deserve, and I think Ollie should be up there in contention for player of the year, and it kind of took Ollie by surprise, it looked like. But then when you look at the numbers, he got 29 goals and assists this season, no penalties. It's by far the most when you take out penalties, which is a big factor. I know you still got to put him in the back of the net, but I mean, if Ollie Watkins was on penalties, he'd have an extra, what, I don't know how many he's got this season, 5 or 6. It seems like he scored a fair few penalties. If he had then, he'd be the top scorer, but easily, over Haaland, who broke the record last year. And saying he's a winger, not a striker, to be one goal off Haaland, bit of a ridiculous comment. I think he's a great player, and he took his goal very well yesterday. Was onside, he was in his own half, but then the finish at the end of it was brilliant as well, because sometimes when you get too much time to think about your finish, you see a lot of strikers fluster, but now he's pretty calm. He's had a great season. He should be in the team of the year, definitely. He probably it's one of them seasons, I think. I don't know what you lads reckon. There's usually one or two names that are definite, like, clear of the rest of the league. To me, this season, he could be 10 players, and I just would be like, they don't seem like they're player of the year, but then when I can think of who else it should be, it's not like a De Bruyne clear or a Salah clear or a Haaland should be clearly the player of the year. It's a bit of a weird one, so I wouldn't mind it going to an Ollie Watkins this year.
Yeah, and definitely, and Gareth Southgate has definitely got a lot to think about when it comes to Ollie Watkins. Completely different players to Harry Kane and Ivan Toney. But Stan, we're going to move back to Arsenal now. What a big week this is coming up for Arsenal now, obviously, mentally, and just given the opposition that's in front of them for Arsenal. You discussed their upcoming fixtures, but first and foremost, Stan, it is Bayern Munich. So Arsenal, Stan, bit of a prediction and why you think it. We're going to talk a little bit more Champions League later, but do Arsenal finish this season trophyless and maybe go out in the next stage away at Bayern?
I think they do, yeah. I mean, I think it's unlikely that they win the league now, or less likely than City winning the league, should I say. But, look, if you're going to Bayern Munich and you're going into that second leg after a draw, Bayern Munich are at home. Again, you're not the favourite to go win that game either. So I suppose if you're looking at it from a favourites, you know, perspective, a logical perspective, then you'd expect Bayern Munich to win that game a lot more, you know, 9 times out of 10 maybe, or 8 times out of 10, or at least more often than Arsenal will. So I think if you're an Arsenal team and you're having to go to Bayern Munich and maybe draw, and obviously then extra time and penalties come into it, but not get beat, then that's not really a situation you want to put yourself in, especially with obviously the run of form they had before the Bayern game, and then only taking a 2-2 to the Allianz. So, you know, you don't really know what Bayern you're going to get. Will they react after obviously Leverkusen lifting the title finally? I mean, it was over anyway, but now that it's official, will their eggs all be in the Champions League basket? Will that spur them on, or will we see what's happened under Tuchel, and it's kind of, they know that he's not going to be there next year, and, you know, it doesn't really matter too much. So I don't know. I mean, like I say, if you're going off a logical perspective, you'd expect Bayern Munich to beat Arsenal, just like I think you'd expect City to beat Madrid. I think if you know, after the draws in the first leg, I think that the home teams in the second leg are the favourites in both ties, and it could easily be another trophyless season for Arsenal and Arteta after, you know, again, taking it to the 31st, 32nd game week and, you know, pushing pretty much to the end. So, but look, they're closer, I think, mentally than last season. I think even though obviously they'd led on points, I think the heads had gone. Whereas now, like I said before, give it a fortnight and Arsenal could be back on top. So I'd say it's more likely than not that they do end up with no trophies. So.
It's huge mentally, that, isn't it, on Wednesday for us. For both teams, actually. I mean, spoke about Bayern there. They probably are. They give up on the league weeks ago, so it's all the Champions League or nothing. But you do wonder what the Arsenal team is like mentally. The fan reaction has been complete head loss, which is just, one, enjoyable, because Arsenal fans are fucking well annoying. But yeah, the Twitter side of Arsenal fans are well annoying, should I say, which are the only ones that I come across. But they've acted like the league's completely gone. I mean, they're in the same position City were in on Saturday afternoon. And it's literally just changed in 24 hours. Like, why can't that happen again? some of the reaction to it has been ridiculous. But you do wonder what the mentality of the actual players is and what the mentality of Arteta is and the rest of the coaching staff. Are they kind of thinking that, or is it not? They will want to say that they're thinking that, obviously, but it's a bit different. When you compare it to City, you kind of... Before this weekend had happened, it was this three-horse title race, and you wasn't saying City were the favourites in pretty much everyone's book, because they needed Arsenal and Liverpool both to drop points. And now that it's happened, the reaction from Liverpool and Arsenal is kind of, oh, well, it's over now. But no one from City kind of thought it's over now. But that's because they've won it 4 times in the past 5 years or whatever, so they've got that winning mentality. Do Arsenal have that? And going into a game on Wednesday where it's arguably no trophy, it's your season, isn't it? If you lose that game on Wednesday, it could be your season, pretty much. And to have that loss at Villa on Sunday, just coming before it, it's going to be a huge test for them to bounce back. And Cook, another team who's had a huge week mentally, is Liverpool, after having this unbeaten record at Anfield for so long. They've had 72 hours where Atlanta have come and thrashed them in their own place, and then Crystal Palace have beat them, and they've one hand off the Premier League and one foul of the Europa League in the space of 3 days. I mean, they put a game on Thursday as well. I mean, before we go on to that, losing at Palace is just an absolute disaster for Liverpool, considering the chances they've had and the chance to go top of the league as well.
Yeah, like you said, it's been a terrible weekend / week for the Liverpool boys and Jurgen Klopp on the farewell tour. And I think for Liverpool, I know you all love a stat, so it's Liverpool. The stat is Liverpool lose back-to-back games at Anfield for the first time in 3 years. So it just shows how massive this actually is for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool, because this doesn't actually happen often. And I know people that watch Serie A will say Atalanta, their thing is that they do score and their games tend to be like basketball games, because they do go all out attacking. Defensively, they're not great. And for them to beat Liverpool at Anfield and not concede is just mental, especially by 3 goals. And Crystal Palace and Liverpool almost have a weird history between each other, especially when Premier League titles are involved. And yeah, just a very strange week. I thought Palace really defended well in this game. I thought they rode the luck, just like any team's going to do if they're going to go and win at Anfield or a big ground like that. And I just thought every time it looked like someone was going to score, there was either a body on the line or the Liverpool player would fluff the chance, aka the Nunes one, where he should definitely score and he just blasts it right at Henderson. They had so many like chances like that, Liverpool. And yeah, I just think Palace were excellent defensively. Liverpool have been poor back-to-back. They look like they could rotate at the start of this game with people like Curtis Jones. And I just think that they just don't look nearly as good. And they look tired. I don't know what you think, Jim or Stan, but I think they genuinely look leggy. And it looks like that part of the season where the adrenaline boost that Klopp leaving and the do it for Klopp kind of movement thing for the players, it's kind of already run out.
Yeah. Well, I think even going back further than the Atlanta defeat, the draw against United at Old Trafford the game before, I didn't watch the Atlanta one, but in the two Premier League games, for me, that front three has properly let them down. And I mean, individually, I think Luis Diaz is a great player and Salah's proven his worth. Nunes, for me, needs to do a bit more, but on paper, it's great. It's fast, it's ferocious, it's the counter-attacks. But the amount of times they could have put United to bed and the amount of times they could have got themselves in front against Palace, And you can set if, and I thought Palace defended really well. I thought he played as good as you're going to get for a mid-table team away at Anfield. I thought he was brilliant, and I thought they had a few chances themselves. But they were big misses, some of them. They weren't. The Jones one was clean through. There's nothing a Palace player's going to do about that one. The Jota one, where it's, I think it's blocked, is it by Klein, just before it comes off? Probably shouldn't give Klein a chance. I think Diaz had one of the back posts, but Henderson made a great save. But again, probably shouldn't give Henderson a chance. There's a great saves and great blocks and last-ditch defending, but it's two Premier League games and a bounce now where that front three, for me, Stan, I don't know what you think, in transition, it's miles and miles apart from that Mane, Firmino, Salah front three that had won in the league before.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Salah's still there, but if you look at Darwin and Diaz compared to Mane and Firmino, it's not close, really. I think they're both obviously really energetic and they're a bit chaotic and they'll cause issues, but in terms of that final moment, that final decision, obviously, they're nowhere near her and they've shown that, but it's like Jim says, I mean, over the last maybe half a dozen games for Liverpool, I mean, I thought they were poor against us in the FA Cup and obviously we got that last-minute winner. But even since then, I mean, they went 1-0 down early on to Brighton. They needed, although I think they won 3-1 against Sheffield United. It was the second and the third were late. Sheffield United equalised in the second half. And obviously since then, we've seen them get beat by Atalanta and obviously get beat by Crystal Palace. So the results aren't there. And obviously the performances are nowhere near too. And I think with you know, obviously the losses at home have come like buses, obviously one after the other. And Liverpool's next three league games are all away from home, and we talk about how important Anfield is. They're not going to have that, and they need to travel away to Bergamo as well. So the next four games are all away from home, and there's a chance that, give it a fortnight, they're out of the Europa League and I don't know, 5-6 points off first with four games left. So the season could really crumble. I mean, Cook spoke there about the adrenaline with Klopp leaving and stuff. It might have even backfired where it's become a little bit too emotional and a little bit too much for them. And obviously the crowd, it might just be, you know, the occasion, the quadruple, obviously going out to United how they did. You know, they've got the lead, they've got Arsenal and City are pushing so much. Europa League, there's some tough opposition there. Later on in the stages, I mean, Bayer Leverkusen are in there, so even if they get through there with Atalanta, it's not a given that they win that. So, you know, it might have just got too much for them. And I think, I mean, Neville said it after that United game, the league game, that the looks on the faces like they should have won that. And have they lost a little bit of confidence that they can kill games off? And they've gone behind again against Palace. They've gone behind against Brighton, obviously. So I don't think they've had a clean sheet for 8 or 9 games now. And that's defence wins your titles, as Ferg used to say all the time. So huge blows for Liverpool at the moment, and they're not going to have that Anfield crowd to help them turn around over the next 3 or 4 games, and they need to get points on the board, and they need a huge performance in Bergamo on Thursday.
Okay, so Jim, Crystal Palace, they've got a new manager, they finally replaced Roy, I want to say it was about 5 or 6 weeks ago now, Oliver Glasner. He is an Austrian. I don't know if anyone's familiar with his career. I'm not actually that familiar with him, to be honest with you, but he's come in, he's completely transformed the way Crystal Palace are playing. They've gone to Anfield obviously and won it. But Jim, I just want to talk to you about some players that obviously we've been very wax lyrical about on the pod, Michael Olise and Ebrecce Eze, and it's good to see these boys playing in it and fit. Oh, big yeah. Shout out as well before you say it about Adam Wharton as well.
Yeah. Don't you worry, Adam Wharton's getting all the praise. I love, he was brilliant at Anfield.
Oh, and Jefferson Lerma in the back three.
Yeah, I mean, but firstly, Olise and Eze are two of the better players to watch in the Premier League. Glide with the ball, only both of them. I mean, deceptively quick because the ball's stuck to the boot. They're not exactly rapid themselves, but they can dribble with the ball almost at full pace. And I thought against Liverpool, there was times when that high-press Liverpool, they was kind of penning them in. Palace were relying a lot on them dribbling skills to get them out of tight areas and to just be a bit calm and keep the ball, not keep giving it back to Liverpool. And they did a great job, and so did Mateta as well, who's a big lad and can use his body well. And then, yeah, Adam Wharton, who's, I think he's 20, come from Blackburn. Him and Will Hughes in midfield is nothing. When you look at it on paper, I kind of thought, for fuck's sake. But then in reality, really, really good utility players. Adam Warren looked absolutely unfazed. I mean, even at the end of the game, he'd play, he obviously started when Liverpool were fully on attacking. I think there was times when he was the most advanced player at Palace because he still had the legs in him to press. Yeah, brilliant pair of him. And it was a bit of makeshift defence as well. Jefferson Lerma's not usually the one that's going to be in there. There was without Mark Gahey. Munoz played really well, Colombian on Colombian on that side. And I thought Tyrick Mitchell had a really good game too. And I always say this when I watch an England lad play decent, but should Tyrick Mitchell be playing for the national team? Maybe. I mean, when England are missing out on so many left-backs, I thought he was brilliant. So yeah, really just an amazing all-round team performance. Dean Henderson had some great saves as well. So yeah, there wasn't one bad player. There wasn't one player that played badly, even the lads that came off the bench. When that happens, then you probably deserve another point. And they stole three because Liverpool let them, I would say.
And finally in the title race, we come to Manchester City. We've saved the best till last as we sit top of the table for the first time since November. The six games left in the Premier League, six winnable games, definitely in comparison to maybe somebody like Arsenal's running. Jim, will City do it? Ball's on the table.
They should do. They should do. I think all the things I've said previously in this pod about the emotion of Arsenal, and you kind of mentioned it with Liverpool, and is it a bit too much for Klopp? Because at first it spurred him on when he announced that he was going to leave in October, November, whenever it was. But now it's kind of, we have to win, or we're just letting him down massively. For City, it's just been business as usual. They've quietly gone something like 19, 20 games without getting beat, and they've won 17 or 18 of them. I thought both Liverpool and Arsenal, you could say they've lost it. If City do go on to win the next six, which is, this is what they're capable of in the business end of the season, I think they go away to Brighton, which is a pretty tough game because I think they play that after. They don't play this weekend because of the FA Cup, so the pressure will be on. You expect Liverpool and Arsenal to go above them. Brighton like to play a bit of expansive football, though, so this is one of them where it's a bit of a tough game, but it suits City because they're not going to just sit back. They go away to Spurs, the second to last game of the season. If they can have a bit of a cushion there or just get through that, I mean, they fucking drew a goal at that stadium, for God's sake, then I think the league's done. But yeah, this is what City do. And they've not been brilliant as well. They've done this in the past and been brilliant, but this season, I think Arsenal and Liverpool have let them. I think when you look at the total points tally this season, it might just be like 87, 88, which is not the high heights of what Guardiola has done. We've struggled at times. We've not played well. We've come for a period where we played Arsenal, Liverpool, Villa, Madrid in the space of like 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever it was. In only the Villa game, we played well, and we didn't lose any of them. And I think that's on Arsenal and Liverpool. I mean, without talking about Champions League, Madrid should have put us to bed as well. But Arsenal and Liverpool in them games where City didn't show up. City had never played that badly at Anfield, and like, they usually get punished. And yeah, they played Arsenal at home, but Arsenal fans at the end were celebrating. Like, it was a good point from on paper. But City were without Edison, without Diaz. No, not Diaz, without Stones, with Walker. They just about put a back four together. They didn't play well at all. And you've let us off both games, off both teams. And yeah, now the ball's in City's court unexpectedly. But also, this is kind of what I thought would happen in terms of winning the league. These big games where they build it up on Super Sunday or whatever, and it's going to be, this is for the title. The league is won. Your home games to Palace, your home games to Villa, your home games to Luton. City don't lose them games. City, when's the last time City have been at home and they've lost one against a bottom half team? Rarely happens. And that's because, and that's why they've won four titles out of the last five, and they're threatening a fourth in a row. And that's why Arsenal and Liverpool just haven't done it, because these are games where you expect them to win, but they've got it in them to not to. And yeah, that's what the titles won, and that's what Ferg used to do in it. He used to, these games are business, he wins them. So yeah, an amazing weekend for City. You played pretty well against Luton, but it was a pretty poor performance, I thought, from Luton. Just kind of let City do what they want. And yeah, I don't think City expected to be top of the league. If you go back to Bernardo Silva's interview at the end of the Arsenal game, he was disappointed because they didn't win, and now they had to rely on the other two to lose, and it's happened a week later. So, yeah, just got to carry on, and I think what can stop him maybe is the build-up of fixtures, obviously being in the FA Cup as well, semi-final against Chelsea, and then quarter-finals against Madrid. They might struggle in that department, but everyone's coming back to fitness now, so there's no reason not to.
Yeah, so I would agree. I mean, I've said for a while now that I think City are the favourites anyway, and I think they definitely are now with being in the driving seat. There's nothing, don't think it'd surprise anybody for City to win the next six league games, and then obviously it doesn't matter what Arsenal or Liverpool do. But Jim, I'm going to ask you another question. From the City perspective, in terms of Liverpool or Arsenal, if you had to pick one, who are you are afraid of usurping you and winning the title?
With this seat, it's got to be Liverpool, based on what they've done before. I think Arsenal are a better side, if I'm being honest with you. But I think their fixtures are harder, so I don't expect Arsenal to win the next six, where I think Liverpool could. I can't remember who Arsenal play exactly, but they still got to play United, Spurs, Chelsea, is it? And that's out of the six. The Spurs one, obviously, is probably the best side this season out of them. And for them, it's a North London derby as well. So Spurs are going to be extra motivated. The game against United, Arsenal United, is one of the biggest rivalries in Premier League history. The game against Chelsea is a London derby. I mean, all three, not only are good teams who are very capable of beating Arsenal, they've got that. They want to upset them as well. There's going to be no case of just two good teams going at it. So yeah, I think Arsenal are a better side. And I think Liverpool, when you spoke on before, not missing the chances and gone behind all season, I think he's caught up with them a little bit, to be honest with you. And I just think the pressure's on them more than any of the other top three, just because of what's happened to Klopp at the end of the season. It's kind of win the title now, or I don't want to over-exaggerate it. They waited 30 years for one before Klopp came. I mean, they're only going to be fearing the worst them fans, and it's going to be ingrained in the players a little bit, I think. So I'm going to say Arsenal, but the fixtures are very hard.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's also a chance that Liverpool go out of the Europa League, or it's more likely than not, and Arsenal could go to the Allianz and win. It wouldn't be the biggest of shocks, I don't think. So you could have a Liverpool with a straight run at the Premier League, and Arsenal maybe juggling Champions League, and obviously the toughest run out of the three. Cook, I'll come to you very quickly. FA Cup semi-final against City. Are you going to beat them in that game? Are you going to stop a potential back-to-back treble if obviously City get past Madrid and what else and win the next six? City are on still for back-to-back trebles. Are Chelsea going to be the team to stop them doing that?
To not sit on the fence, I'm going to say yeah, just because we literally have nothing to lose and they have everything to lose, I would say. That's the mentality that Chelsea are, because I would say for Chelsea to finish in Europe this season, no matter the competition, whether that be Conference League or Europa, is success. And we can do that by either winning the FA Cup or finishing in the top eight, is it? For guaranteed Europe. So, yeah, I would say the pressure's on City, just like it would have been if Chelsea had drawn Coventry. And I said to you, Stan, before the draw was even made, I really wouldn't want Coventry, just because the amount of pressure that would put on Chelsea, it wouldn't do this team any good. And we might see United struggle against him, we will see. But yeah, I think, quickly, Jim, I think that Chelsea have everything to gain in terms of we have nothing to lose, and City probably do have everything to lose with the
expectations. Yeah, I think the way the season's going as well, I think there's a really good chance of us resting a few players as well, because you've got that game away at Brighton, which we'll need to win to stay top. And that's not because he wants to not take the competition seriously, but he did it last year when he was in the treble. But luckily, we played Sheffield United in the semis. I just actually thought I'd look at the lineup. Calvin Phillips started. That's all you need to know about how much Pep wanted to win that game. I mean, how much he cared about that game in terms of that, or the Bayern quarter, or the Premier League games we had. Sergio Gomez started. I mean, when Sergio Gomez and Calvin Phillips are starting games, that's the one in the calendar that Pep's for, I'm going to rest my players for. And I think, honestly, he could do it against Chelsea. And that's not us trying to disrespect Chelsea, but that's us prioritising Champions League and Premier League, which is what you've got to do out of them three competitions that you're in. And the squad's smaller than it was last season, too. So, yeah, I'm expecting your Rico Lewis's, your Oscar Bobs, starting that game, Ortega, obviously, the cup keeper. Yeah, I mean, they're still great players, but there's a decent chance for Chelsea. They caused the problems when we started our full team, so yeah, why not?
Right, listeners, that music can only mean one thing. It is, of course, the bet of the week. Only three Premier League games this week, 2 3 o'clocks and a 7:30, because Manchester City and Chelsea are in FA Cup semi-final action at Wembley. So to start off the bet of the week, we've got Luton Town versus Brentford. I'm going to go for Luton Town to win this one. I think that they need to start picking up points ASAP, and I think they will do against the fragile Brentford, who will get dragged into a scrap. Then we're moving on to Sheffield United versus Burnley. I'm going to go for under 2.5 in this one because these two can't buy a goal. This one will be like 4-4 now I've said that. Then chronologically moving in time order, Man City versus Chelsea at Wembley. Like we said, we're going to go both teams to score, no draw in the FA Cup semi-final. And then last but not least, Wolves versus Arsenal. Big one. I'm going to go Wolves double chance. They've got Hwang and Cunha back now. They're slowly getting back to the Wolves of old. And at Molineux, they're a problem, especially under the lights. So just to recap the bet of the week, Luton Town versus Brentford. Going to go for a Hatters win in that one, aka Luton Town, if you don't know that. They're the Hatters. Sheffield United versus Burnley, under 2.5 goals. Man City, Chelsea, both teams to score, no draw. And Wolves double chance against Arsenal. And Stan, what can the listeners do with that?
And shove it up your hackers. Hello and welcome back. And after the bet of the week, we're going to have a game. And it is, of course, football friends. And we've got a couple of football friends here today. We've got Cook and Jim. A little 1v1. And we'll get straight into it. This game needs no introduction anymore. So we'll go with it. Player one. So the first player we played with is Louis Saha in 2005. So how's your Louis Saha knowledge? Where was he in 2005? The next player. Tom Cleverley, John O'Shea, Nick Powell.
I can see the theme.
And James Wilson. There we go. Do you like that? Little United theme running through all that. Yes. Five players that have all played for United. But right. Did they even play for United for this player?
Retired, son, or still playing?
Retired, of course. Retired.
Retired, of course. Retired.
I know who this is.
You know who this is. Go on, go for it.
This is Darren Gibson.
It is Darren Gibson, straight off the bat. Do you want to tell me why?
Sorry, listeners. Because Jim said he saw the theme. It's a United Wigan Athletic theme by the looks of the majority of it. But I did know that he either ended his career or is still playing at Salford with James Wilson, who he did play at United at some point. Louis Saha at Manchester United under Sir Alex. Believe you won an FA Cup that year. Could be wrong. Against Arsenal?
We lost it, unfortunately, on penalties.
Haha, sorry. Wigan Athletic with Tom Cleverley?
No, Everton.
Was it Everton? Shazy at Sunderland?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Nick Powell at Tix?
At Tix, yeah, that's a Tix there.
There we go.
It's Darren Gibson. It's straight off the bat. A very quick one. But luckily, I do have two more. Fear.
Didn't get a punch in, did I? Like, hold it elbow then.
You didn't, Jim, but get it in for this one. Get your pen and paper ready. And you at home, you little beautiful listeners. Play number two. So this guy started his career in 2002. But what I'm going to do is five main clubs. There's a couple of loans in there, but you'll get it off the five main clubs. So he played with Gareth Bale in 2006, Peter Crouch, Darren Bent, Joe Mason, and Brad Guzan.
Oh, retired, of course.
Retired, of course. Yeah, yeah. They're all three are retired.
Oh, retired. Okay.
Yeah.
Gareth Bale, Peter Crouch, Darren Bent.
Don't forget you have your three lifelines, which obviously between you can agree on. So you've got your sub. What's your thinking? I'll explain them. So you've got your substitution. can sub out any name in that list, and I'll give you a name that is very obvious. So let's say, I don't know, it's United, and I'll tell you it's Ryan Giggs. I'm not going to try and trick you with a substitution. You've got a 50-50, so you could decide, oh, is it for, I don't know, Ronaldo, I think it's Sporting or United. I will either say, yes, it's United, yes, it's Sporting, or neither, which might open a door for something else. And then you've got the year as well. So you've already got Gareth Bale's year there in 2006. So I will tell you a year he played with any of the other four.
Right, Jim. I believe here that Bale was at Southampton because I know Walcott went to the 2006 World Cup in Germany for Arsenal. That's my logic with that one.
Yeah, well, I don't know anyone else he played for. Then he came from Academy, didn't he? Southampton, no?
Yeah, he did.
So it's just Southampton, Tottenham. It's not Tottenham. So it's pretty
good. It is Southampton. I'll give you that.
Well, yeah. Darren Bent played at Aston Villa, Sunderland.
Spurs.
Yeah, Spuds.
Mm-hmm. Fulham.
Yeah, Fulham, yeah.
Did you have a derby?
Derby later on, yeah. Ipswich as well, right at the beginning.
Yeah, we got... At the end.
Did he?
Yeah. But we've got to think of the timeline, Jim. If it's all
Peter
right,
Peter Crouch. Peter Crouch, 2006. Well, after 2006, obviously, of course. It could be Liverpool. I think he was still Liverpool around then.
He was at Liverpool for like two seasons, wasn't he? Because he played. He didn't come on in that Champions League final, did he? And he's like, that's one of his regrets. Him not
probably playing. After Liverpool. And where did he go after Liverpool? Did he go Portsmouth after Liverpool? Portsmouth, Spurs. That kind of Crouch. Stoke, probably not Stoke, it's probably a bit late.
Yeah, Portsmouth.
He probably played for Spurs, this guy, let's just face that.
Did anyone go from, like, because there was a while where Spurs and Portsmouth traded quite a few players.
Yeah, I think he played for Spurs or Portsmouth.
I'm talking your Cranchires, your Defoes, your players like that.
You know what, Stan? We'll use our Portsmouth. We'll use our 50-50 on Crouch on Portsmouth Spurs.
Okay, it's neither Portsmouth or Spurs.
Oh, that's still info. It's an L, but it's still info.
What I will say is obviously it's chronological, but this guy could have been at the club with Crouch. He could have played there for 7 years, and then in the seventh year he played with Crouch. So there could be 6 years of Crouch being elsewhere, but he still was there with him.
Yes, this could be Stoke then. He's right.
So it could be Stoke, yes.
So kind, isn't
it? But you've still got three more players, and you've used your 50-50, so you've got your substitute and your year. So I'll repeat it again. You've got Gareth Bale, 2006, Peter Crouch, Darren Bent, Joe Mason, Brad Guzan.
And I thought about Brad Guzan.
Right.
Yeah, I thought you forgot about Brad.
Yeah. You forgot about Brad.
I was Snoop Dogg's at B-side.
Right, Jim. Mason at Cardiff. Crouchy. Early doors. Let's make that link. If we could.
There's Bent in the middle of the cook as well.
There is. But who do we know that's in between the Crouchy at Stoke. Bale probably at Southampton. So Southampton.
It'll be a dot of this.
Oh no, it's not him.
Oh, it's a great name. It's a great name.
He's one of these FIFA players that we've defo loved in the past.
Oh, is this guy?
Could he play for Stoke? And I like players that play for Stoke. I can't think of that. Darren Bent.
I think I know who this is.
No, go on.
Oh wait. What's his fucking name? He's a striker. Wait.
He is a striker.
Oh, wait.
Go on, cross it in. I'll nod it in.
Oh.
This guy would have loved that, Jim, what you just said.
Oh, it's Ken Wynne-Jones.
It is Ken Wynne-Jones.
Oh, I knew it'd be a dosser.
It is. Southampton with Bale. Stoke with Crouch. Sunderland with Bent.
Sunderland, yeah.
Cardiff City with Joe Mason. And Atlanta United with Brad Guzan. There we go. So it is Ken Wynne-Jones. So it's 2-0 to Cook. Jim, this is a little consolation to stop it going a clean sweep for Mr. Cook.
Yeah, this is what's going to happen in the FA Cup semi.
Jim, this one's for you.
Hens at the ready. So this guy started his career in 2003. And he played with Chori Castro in 2006. Ooh. Great FIFA name, if you remember that. 2006. Then he played with Bruno Soriano, Stefan Savic, Alexis Sanchez, Giovanni Simeone, and then he played for two more clubs before retiring.
Jesus. What year was Castro? Sorry, did you say was it 2003?
2006. This guy started his career in 2003 for a club
before that. Who was the one after Soriano? Sorry, Stan.
Stefan Savic.
Savic, right, that's me.
Alexis Sanchez and Giovanni Simeone, yes. And then two more clubs, and then he retired.
Yeah.
Right, who's Simeone played for? It can't be many, he's quite young. I mean, it's obviously not Forrest. I only found out he played for Forrest this weekend.
What? No, that's Gio Reyna. That's
Giovanni Reyna.
Oh, so it is. Oh, fucking know this lad is. This is Simeone's lad, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not Claudio's lad. Sorry, fellas.
What is?
Very same. Oh, fuck. I know less about him then. I know more about Gio Reyna. Simeone. Who is it? He obviously played for LA.
Giovanni Simeone.
He played in Serie A, didn't he?
He currently plays for Lazio.
I don't think he's played for Atleti, you know, because I think Diego said he was too lazy.
He went there, though, didn't he? Oh, no.
Don't think so.
That up.
This isn't Atleti for him anyway, so...
I thought he played... I think I remember him in Serie A. See, he played for Lazio now. He's played for someone else. He played for Napoli.
I think he was at Napoli last season, yeah. It's neither of those two clubs. He is Serie A. But just focus on some of the others. The middle three is what will give it away.
Yeah, I don't know who Soriano is, Dan. So that's not going to...
You don't remember Bruno Soriano?
No.
Well, you can use your substitute if you want.
Can we use that? Do you know who he is?
Well, no. We can either do that or we can ask for the year he played with Alexis Sanchez. That might help us.
Yeah, you could do. Well, you could do both. You've got two lifelines left. You can do both of those things if you wish.
Let's do both.
Double down.
Okay.
It's a Monday.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
Okay. So, we've got a substitution for Bruno Soriano, and the substitute I would use is Giuseppe Rossi. And don't forget, I'm not trying to trick you. I need you to think of the most obvious club that he's played for. And the year he played with Alexis Sanchez was 2019. So I'll run through them all again. Chori Castro in 2006. Giuseppe Rossi. Stefan Savic. Alexis Sanchez in 2019. And Giovanni Simeone.
Was there not a gap between first and second? Like, that's like between Castro and Rossi. It's not a gap.
No.
He's played at one club for a while then, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Right, Sanchez 2019, Cook. First, Rossi. That's Villarreal, isn't it?
It is Villarreal, yes.
Yeah.
Sanchez 2019. I think it could be United.
I think it's
at Brighton. That's my Alps.
I think he's at United just because I think he's in that era where Ozil and him and I'm trying to think. They must have had Giroud at that time as well. That Oxlade-Chamberlain. It was like that crop of Arsenal players they had.
What happened 2019? What was we doing? City's won the league by year.
They might have won the FA Cup that year, Arsenal. You know? But anyway, regardless, I think he was at Man United, but I could be wrong. But looking at it now, Soriano for Rossi does kind of help because Villarreal, Savic as well.
What year? Oh, no, we didn't get that year, sorry.
You like to think Savic was at City. So, making that link from Villarreal to City, do they do business a lot?
Because at City, Alexis Sanchez is probably not going to be at United.
You never know.
Not much business across that, how it could be. But
Savic isn't at City. Sanchez was technically at United, but he went on loan somewhere this season. Ollie didn't fancy him, shipped him out somewhere.
He'd been at like six clubs in like 1 year. And
yeah, he'd been at like he played for like Marseille.
Did he go on loan to Barca? No.
Oh, no.
No.
He didn't, did he?
I remember him starting at Udinese, then going to Barca, then going to Arsenal, then United, then wherever he is. Now he's at Inter.
Where did he go? Did he go to Inter from?
Marseille, I think, as a free transfer. But prior to him going to Marseille, he went, like Stan said, he went on loan.
He did.
So Savage is probably out of Letty then.
Yeah.
He's not played it. Has he played anywhere else? I don't know where City got him from.
It is at Letty.
He got him from the fucking bin. He was shitting.
Made a great career for himself.
He did. Had some beef with Grillo last year as well, which was enjoyable. Oh, so he must be a Spanish boy, this lad.
Is this?
He speaks Spanish.
Is this Gabri? Or Gabby?
No, it's not Gabby. No. He speaks Spanish. He's not Spanish, though.
Villarreal, Atleti. Oh. Someone else.
And you've named the club for Alexis.
Name the club.
Yeah, and he's had three different stints there.
He's had three different stints there? Fuck. What, this player has?
That'd be Inter.
Yep. It is Inter.
Yeah, it'd be Inter.
They loaned him, they bought him, he went to Marseille, and now he's back at Inter.
He likes Milan.
He does.
Wait, this player's had three different stints at Inter, or Sanchez has?
No, Sanchez has.
Oh, right, okay.
I've told you, you've got the three clubs in the middle now.
We have, but...
So tell me
very
there.
Good.
Right, so it's...
Atleti. You've got Villarreal,
Atleti,
Inter.
It's got to be...
Two more clubs, then retired.
Played with Gio Simeone. Inter Serie A, so stayed there after Inter, and then two more clubs retired.
Fucking hell, we're bad us.
I know.
I'm worse though, mate.
What if I told you, what if I swapped out Chori Castro and said Fernando Muslera?
It really is desperate to... Is it Godin?
It is Godin.
You played for Inter.
Oh,
you weren't very good.
With Simeone at Cagliari.
Ari Simeone, two more clubs have retired. So Chori Castro and Muslera was with Club Nacional in Uruguay, and he went to Villarreal, Atletico, Inter, Cagliari, two more clubs have retired. Diego Godin, great top centre back.
Top centre back. He was past his peak when he went to Inter.
He was.
But, I remember them days. Yeah.
Great at Atletico Madrid, proper centre half, and there was 2-1 to cup.
Yeah, me getting that point there was the football equivalent of Haaland's performance on Saturday, where he didn't do much and got a penalty. Fuck you.
Right, listeners, hope you all enjoyed that. Who am I? We're just winding down here. Just to let you know where you can find us when we're not making pods. So across Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, we are available under the handle Cookie Podcast, but in the word cookie, it's 3-0. So it's COOOKIE Podcast for TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you don't have time to listen to a full pod in its entirety, just type in on YouTube Cookie Podcast Clips. But if you do have the time, search in wherever you get your podcast. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Leave a 5-star review. Pinch your significant other's phone. Give us a 5-star. Leave a comment. It really helps us get up the algorithm and do more pods for you lots. And that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah,